This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And with us today
is
our buddy.
Which one? We have more than one?
Well, we have one really good buddy.
Yeah, he comes back every year.
Yes, he does.
He's a glutton for punishment.
Definitely.
Anyway, we're speaking about Barnaby Wayne Fan. Good to see you, sir.
Good morning.
It's great to see you guys. It's great to be back.
Great. How you been doing? You keeping yourself busy?
Oh, yeah, I'm keeping myself very busy. Working on Next Generation, Son of Fastmobile, which we call the Bat Ray, which I think we talked about a good bit last year.
Yeah, the Bat Ray. But how you should be a year further along, I hope.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Many, many rivets since last we talked.
Okay.
I'm just reflecting on the fact that this year is the 30th anniversary of when I flew the original Fastmobile here.
Oh, my God. Is it really that far?
Yeah, it's really that long.
Oh, my word. Wow. Now I really feel old. Thanks.
Yeah. What about me?
I'm going to go home and cry.
But, you think about it, it's great. In all those 30 years, you're still doing stuff and still building new airplanes. And, look at all the progress we're seeing out on the field.
You'd think after 100 plus years of aviation, everything would have been thought of.
Yeah, but, there's such a great supply of smart, enthusiastic people who just keep pushing it along. And, one of the things you see is, the new technologies show up and they enable doing things that you couldn't do before. I mean, things that you'd almost dreamed about. My new project, all of the tubes and all of the gussets are NC cut.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
On a homemade NC machine that one of my chapter members owns, my fellow chapter members. And so, with this one, I was able to lay the entire structure out in CAD, cut all the parts in CNC. When we did the original airplane, it was all bandsaw and file.
Right.
And we were hand calculating the angles between the tubes. So it's like, and this airplane will actually have a few 3D printed parts in it.
Nice. Like
wow.
The pilot.
Yeah.
Should always 3D print the pilot.
Yeah.
Bigger, heavier?
Light sport. So yeah, two seat.
Two seat though.
Yeah, two seat. So, roughly twice the takeoff gross weight. Because the original Fastmobile was in the 600-ish range.
And you're going to use, I'm assuming, a Rotax or something like that?
Baselining a Jabiru 3300.
Okay. Six-cylinder, nice.
Yeah, well, the airplane would probably do fine on 85 horsepower. But, I've already got a 150, so I don't need another underpowered airplane.
Right. Nice. Nice.
So, yeah.
So then it'll be a turbocharged Jabiru.
Oh, no. We're trying to keep it simple in the propulsion.
Oh, okay. Electric motors are simple.
Yeah, but the batteries aren't.
Right.
No, there's a philosophy there, though. If you look at radical airplanes, a lot of times the reason radical airplanes fail is because the inventor can't stop inventing. So they keep adding all the new things, right?
Yeah.
And so what I've tried to do on my projects is, I'm putting the innovation and the radical part where it counts in the configuration of the airplane. And then I'm using, conventional materials. It's aluminum. It's put together with conventional rivets and, trying to make the propulsion installation as boring as I possibly can.
Okay.
So tractor engine, installed per the manufacturer's manual, no fancy drive systems or anything like that.
Okay. So, yeah, because like you said, your experiment is not the buried systems, it's the shape or the configuration.
And when I'm doing flight test, the last thing in the world I want to be worrying about is whether the propulsion is going to keep propelling. I've been through having propulsion stop propelling, and I did not enjoy it.
I imagine that's an understatement.
Well, it's almost a running joke with my colleagues now. I have my, Wayne Fan's laws of applied aerodynamics. And the first law is there's a surprise hiding in every airplane. And the second law is it's always propulsion's fault. And I don't want this to be a second law airplane.
Gotcha.
Well, the only people that really enjoy power failures are the glider pilots.
Yeah. Oh, I have a dear friend who learned how to fly in gliders. When I met them, they were a private pilot glider only. And they started learning power, and they said, "Oh my God, I have to learn how to do an engine in landing."
Yeah.
Wow.
I imagine it was complicated for them.
Oh yeah, they did fine. Good pilot.
Yeah.
But still, it's a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
Being a glider pilot does make you a much better pilot. And I know years ago when I had my one engine out, you know, because I have a glider rating also, though I haven't flown gliders in a long time. Having that idea of how to manage energy in a glider, I think it made a difference in the couple of times in my flying where I've had to assume that the propulsion was not available. I had the one complete engine out, and I had one carb ice incident where I thought I was going to lose the engine. And it turned out fine in the long run. I mean, the carb heat finally did its thing, but I was already managing the energy as though I wasn't going to have any more propulsion.
Exactly.
And that's where the glider, you know, being a glider pilot made a huge difference.
Right. It's much less panic.
Yeah, well, you just, you know, you do what you have to do, but...
Right, right. Well, I think I'm a fan of having as many ratings as you think you can get.
Yeah, you know...
extra tools in the box.
Yeah, well, I mean, recently I went the other direction a couple of years ago and got a gyroplane rating.
Nice.
You know, so...
Well, that's ultimate engine out there. Just land. That's
or,
all.
You know, one way to look at it is from maximum L over D to minimum L over D, you know.
Right,
but,
right.
But they're all fun machines to fly.
Yep, and that's the best part. So, do you have a projected completion date in mind?
Oh, you're talking to a home builder.
Yeah.
but you know, to give you the non-facetious answer, you know, this is the third scratch-built airplane I've done. And I know they generally take 3 to 4 years and 3 to 4,000 hours. So I'm about 2 years in. So I figure I'm, you know, year and a half to 2 years to first flight.
Okay.
With the amount of time and effort that I can put into the project.
We're speaking with Barnaby Wayne Fan, and I have a question,
yes.
Which is why you're here. Do you have to fight the urge to, quote, unquote, improve your design as you're constructing and think of ways you could have done it differently?
Yeah, you do, because, you know, you make design decisions on what's workable. What's workable in the sense, in the technical sense, in terms of your skill, my skill as an engineer, my skill as a fabricator. And inevitably, you know, I was actually discussing this with one of my colleagues recently, every design ends up with a kludge in it somewhere. And I think the art to good design is to push the kludge around until it's small, not flight critical, and inconspicuous.
Bury the bugger.
Well, you know, I mean, I've got some things on the airplane. And, you know, the thing is some things you can only learn by actually fabricating it. So I have made a few changes along the way where I look, you know, and do the high five to the far end and say, why the hell didn't I think of this earlier? But, you know, there's still time to clearly see that it's a better approach that I can execute. On a lot of others, it's this will work. I'm sure the thing you think is better today, you would, if you change horses, you will figure out what you didn't see when you're committed to it. So as long as it'll work, just stay the course and finish it. And, you know, this is why we build prototypes, because you learn so much from ship one. It's almost inevitable that ship two can be improved. But you have to build ship one and go through the whole exercise of building it, finding the issues, finding the good parts, too, testing it, and then you learn, and then you can roll that knowledge into the next airplane.
However, on prototype 23, you probably should have had it all worked out by then.
Well, it depends. You know, I mean, if you're like me and every new ship is radically different than the one before, then you're always building a new ship one. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, on production by, you know, number three or number four, you ought to have it down.
Ought to.
Pardon me, is there any truth to the rumor that you should never fly the A model of anything?
No. I think the engineers are good enough that, you know, fly the A model. But just realize that if you buy the A model, you know, 5 years from now, they're going to roll out the B model and you're going to go, oh, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, meantime, you've had your 5 years of flying and good fun with your A model. So
now you're enlisting the help of a lot of your chapter members. Are you building more than one?
We are not building more than one. I'm building one. And then, you know, as I've mentioned before, Bob Engel, who's a chapter member, is building a replica of the original Facetmobile. You know, so if you go to, you know, the EA Chapter 292 hangars in Independence, which is where I live, In the North Hangar, you will find Bob's FMX4, which is a replica of the original Fastenmobile, which is getting very close to first flight.
Except he's going to not use that engine?
No, he's got a V-dub in it. So his airplane is going to weigh a little more than the original, but have twice the horsepower. So I'm looking forward to that. That should be a blast.
That's going to be a hot rod.
Yeah, well, I mean, the original airplane would climb 750 feet per minute and do 100 knots on a Rotax 503.
So that's what, like 40 horsepower?
46 horse. So you take that same airframe, make it 50 pounds heavier, and put 90 horsepower in it. That's going to be a fun ship.
Cool.
And then, you know, in the main part of the hangar is where I'm building the Bat Ray. So there's, you know, there's two facet mobile derived airplanes being built there at the same time, but one each.
Okay.
Well, Barnaby, when you're building these aircraft, you're using a lot of CAD-CAM design and CNC machines. Do you find that it's easier than ever to screw something up?
Not really. I mean, it helps. The CAD helps a lot. But what you have to have your eyes open. It's very easy in CAD to design a joint that looks buildable until you realize that the angle between the tubes is so fine that you can't get your rivet gun in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you do have to have a different perspective. And, you know the acronym CAD, C-A-D, right? So there's computer-aided design, and then I do a lot of cardboard-aided design.
Yep, yes.
Where I will, you know, some of the gussets, I just said, I'm not going to try to develop these on the computer. I've got the thing Clico together, and I will just cut out cardboard templates and put them up there and work with it until it fits. And then I can take the template and make the aluminum part from that. That's how we did it exclusively on the original Fastenmobile. And, you know, it's weird because they're at opposite ends of the technological scale.
And they're both valid.
And they're both really valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, I don't know about other designers, but for me, I can do an awful lot on the computer, but there are some things that I just have to see and touch to really get a feel for.
Okay.
And whether that's a mock-up or the final product, that's the way I tend to design.
All right. Well, I thank you for joining us, Barney. We always love your coming back, and I want to see this airplane fly.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah. I'm Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.